Hey, you guys, it's Sarah. Thank you so much for listening to this new podcast show called In the Mind of Frage about interviews, experiences, and entrepreneurs. On today's episode, Dr. Neil Bernard, the very controversial vegan doctor from the documentary What the Health. You probably know I'm obsessed. It went viral earlier this year. Well, Dr. Neil Bernard has a practice in the Washington, D.C. area, and I got to sit down with him in the office to address some of the controversies around that documentary. So that's today. But also, I wanted to thank you for listening to my two-part series with Danny Starr, the TV and radio personality. And you guys had a ton of comments on my Facebook page. You can follow me on Facebook. Just search Sarah Frazier and then hit pages. Carmen wrote and she said, "It's great to hear your stories. You girls are relatable and an inspiration to all women. Women uplifting women. I'm all about it." So are we. And then also to Christy. Christy wrote, "Sarah and Danny, I'm so proud of both of you for coming together and sharing your story with us on this podcast. Over the course of my career, I've struggled to overcome the challenges of being a successful woman in a, quote, boys club environment. However, I found that it's almost always women who work so very hard to keep me down or undermine my shine. I believe strong women work hard to build each other up. I loved the realness of your conversations and addressing how we often approach situations." Well, Christy, thank you so much. And I heard a lot of that from you guys. So I hope to take that on of kind of why we as women sometimes hold each other down. That will be another In the Mind of Frage topic. Anyway, enjoy Dr. Neil Bernard. And you can check out In the Mind of Frage podcast, a new episode out every Tuesday. Enjoy. Dr. Bernard, I think we're all obsessed with you now from What the Health.
Thank you.
I loved the documentary. Were you surprised at how much controversy and how much discussion this documentary has brought up?
I think it's really terrific because wherever people come down on diet things, they need to make this front and center in what they're talking about. Because let's face it, so many of us have extra weight, our blood sugar's too high, right. We're on medications, and then we look at our kids and we think they're going the same direction as us. So we need to tackle that, and that really means food.
All right, I want to go through, before we kind of talk more in depth about how people can change their diet, there's probably five big things that I'm sure you've seen all the articles that debunking What the Health, these things are over-exaggerated, or there's not enough research. So I want to go through those quickly, and then we'll talk. One of the big ones, I think, was a statement that you had made, that eating an egg a day is as bad as smoking five cigarettes.
That wasn't me.
Okay, well, that wasn't you.
But
it was just on the documentary.
Eggs.
Right, so that was a claim that was on the documentary. So what's your take on that statement?
Cigarettes cause lung cancer, and they increase your risk of heart disease. Now, eggs do something different. They don't cause lung cancer, but they have more cholesterol than any other food and a big load of saturated fat.
Okay.
And although some people have tried to make that go away and say, no, that doesn't really raise your cholesterol, the truth is it does. So when people eat eggs in the context of an otherwise really unhealthy diet, it's pretty hard to see that the egg affects them very much. But on the other hand, if you take people who aren't eating eggs and sausage and things and you put an egg in that person's diet, you can really see the effect. And it does raise their cholesterol. It really does.
Okay. The other one was eating processed meat is as bad for you as smoking. That was the other one. Your critics basically say that some cancers, like colorectal cancer, have been linked to eating meat, but that if really, in order to make that statement, you'd have to be eating processed meats every single day of your life.
Cigarettes cause cancer in the lungs, and because the carcinogens are then excreted in the urine, they also cause bladder cancer. With processed meats, it's something different. The processed meats go into your intestinal tract, and that's where they cause the cancer. And the increase is substantial. This is not a trivial risk.
Right.
If you have about a serving of processed meats each day, your risk of colorectal cancer goes up by maybe 18 or 20%. What if I had bacon for breakfast, pepperoni pizza for lunch, or a hot dog or something like that? That's two servings.
Right there,
36% increase. This kills 50,000 Americans every single year. And if something is increasing your odds by 30-some percent, you don't want that.
But what if you're having bacon once a week? I think a lot of people saw What the Health, and it's like, well, I have bacon on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so am I doing it? Am I still doing a significant amount of damage?
You know, if a person has a cigarette once a week, once a month, does it really hurt them? It's really hard to measure that it does. And if you're having bacon once a month, it's hard to really say whether that affects you very much or not. Problem is, once a month becomes once a week, which becomes twice a week, which becomes every day. And if you look at people's diets, these foods are part of their routine.
I know most people are eating processed meat every day. Okay, drinking milk causes cancer. That was another claim in the film that a lot of people had a problem with. And there's, according to some of your critics, there's a single study, but there are not studies. And there's even some studies saying that dairy can actually reduce a woman's risk of cancer.
Yeah, great question. It started with observational studies. The countries where there was the most milk consumed, they had the highest risk specifically of prostate cancer.
Okay.
So this is the most, or one of the most common cancers in men in most countries. And then within this country, researchers at Harvard started to say, could this be true right here? And they did two huge studies and showed in medical professionals, these are men who did not have cancer at the start of the study,
okay,
those who consumed the most milk and other dairy products had substantially higher risk of prostate cancer compared to others. I'm talking between 30 and 60% increase in risk. That's bad because prostate cancer is already super common, and if it becomes 30 to 60% more common, you're talking about a very serious risk. It's not just that. We also know what milk does in your body. It increases the risk, or it increases the concentration of something called insulin-like growth factor.
Okay.
And this will not be on the test.
Okay.
But this is a compound.
Please.
That in test tube studies, insulin-like growth factor causes cancer cells to grow. And you don't want that. Milk was designed by nature to help a baby grow rapidly. But you're already grown. So now milk can cause cancer cells in your body to grow rapidly too, and to spread. And that's something that nature never had in mind.
Oh, God, I know. That's so big.
I'm going to give you one other thing.
Yes.
Many people are not aware of this, but milk comes from pregnant cows in most cases.
I know. Yes, so, go on.
So to keep milk production high, the farmer has the cows impregnated every single year, and a cow's pregnancy is about 9 months, similar to human pregnancy. Pregnant cows make estrogens that get into the milk. They're concentrated in the cheese, and it's only traces. But women previously treated for breast cancer, who are the biggest consumers of high-fat dairy, have 49% higher mortality from their breast cancer compared to the women who avoid those things. So doctors are now saying, wait a minute, milk was designed to grow a calf.
Right.
It's not designed for you. You're grown up.
Right.
So it's a cultural issue. Milk is not something that you need for health and should not have.
The other big one was the association of meat and diabetes and sugar and diabetes. So explain that to me, because I've watched many clips and it seems as though sugar does not cause type 1 diabetes, but maybe it does type 2. What's the clarification? Because I feel like that was a big one.
It's understandable that people would think, okay, diabetes means there's too much sugar in my blood, so I must have gotten it from eating sugar. And then if I just stop eating sugar, I won't have diabetes anymore. Wrong. Sorry. What we have found is that type 2 diabetes, which is the most common kind, comes from particles of fat that get inside the muscle cells and liver cells. Most people have never heard of this, but this is what we have found. When the muscle and liver cells are filled with fat, the sugar can't get in.
Okay.
And so the sugar builds up in the blood, and then you diagnose diabetes. The answer to it is to get the animal products out of your diet. That way there's no cheese fat or chicken fat getting into your cells anymore. And now the cells can function, and they can take that sugar out of your blood, and the diabetes improves or goes away. Many people have never heard of that, despite the fact
that
the research is very clear. It's been done at the best research centers and published in the best medical journals, and we clearly know how to make this disease improve.
So why do you think, I mean, you know, this documentary really brought to light so many of these things, like diabetes and discussing cholesterol, that I guess we had never really seen. And in the film, it talks a lot about the dairy industry, the meat industry, spend a lot of money marketing to us and almost confusing us. And so, I mean, your years of seeing that, how hard is it to change your patients' perspectives?
The food industry, these are smart people who have a lot of money to spend.
Right.
And increasingly, they are spending it on research studies to try to prove that their products are safe. And if you do research studies in certain ways, for example, an egg will raise cholesterol compared to not eating an egg, but maybe it won't raise your cholesterol too much compared to eating sausage. So I can make the egg look safe compared to something that really wasn't safe anyway. They do a lot of research studies that can confuse people, and I feel your pain. It's really hard to sort that out.
Well, it does, and I think to me, one of the most fascinating parts was it's like there's so much of this kind of trickery in the marketing that yes. You kind of give up and you go everything in moderation, which is the person that I think I am. But I thought in the documentary it was great because you guys were saying that's not a really good strategy, though, right? So even if you're even eating some of these things in moderation, I'm assuming over time all of it adds up, right?
A lot of people have the idea of everything in moderation.
Yeah.
Everything in moderation. That's advice for healthy things.
Okay.
So let's say your 7-year-old daughter likes playing the violin. After about 6 hours, you got to say, you know, you also need to eat dinner. You also need to study. You know, keep it in moderation. Or your child likes nothing but broccoli. That's all I want all day. Wait a minute. Have it in moderation. But moderation doesn't apply to heroin. To cocaine or to foods that are unhealthy for you or for cigarettes. You know, if your 7-year-old daughter says, wait, I can light up everything in moderation. No, the answer is no. Moderation in healthy things, not for things that are going to kill you.
I had read, I think, how many years have you been a vegan plant-based?
30 years.
And I'd read it was because that you were doing surgeries on people and you saw sort of the health effects of what was happening to people. So what was that? Like, what did you begin to, what clicked for you that you were like, oh my God, you know, these patients are coming in, I'm assuming they've got cancer, they've got, right. Was that just what you were seeing and knew?
In my own life, this actually started in an unusual way. I was working in a hospital in Minneapolis. This is before I went to medical school. I was the autopsy assistant. And
we had
a person who died in the hospital of a massive heart attack, and the pathologist that I was working with removed the ribs from the chest, and the heart was filled with atherosclerotic plaque. And he was telling me.
Which is what? Just like plaque? Is plaque like fat? Is what is?
You open up an artery, and you see particles. You see cholesterol in deposits, and it's like concrete. It's hard.
Wow.
And it narrows the artery. Anyway, at the end of the exam, we wrote up the findings that this person had artery narrowings in the heart, in the carotid arteries going to the brain, the arteries to the legs, all over the body. He put the ribs back in the chest and left the room. And I sewed up the skin and everything, and I then went up to the cafeteria where they were serving ribs for lunch. And
oh, God.
I have to tell you, it smelled like a dead body, it looked like a dead body. I just realized, I don't think I'm going to eat this. And as time went on, I don't know if you'd really call that exactly scientific, but I started to associate the diseases I was seeing in the autopsies with what they were serving in the cafeteria. And then as time went on, I started learning that there actually are important connections. I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, and I come from a long line of cattle ranchers. And so I spent the first half of my life eating really unhealthy food. But you can always make up for lost time.
Wow. So, and you talked about this too. I guess we were talking about how like the dairy industry has a lot of disposable income to do these studies. Does the health industry have money? I know you have a research center here, but is it harder for you to do studies that show, okay, hey, wait, these things aren't healthy for you? Like, why haven't we seen more of that? Or is it just not sexy that the dairy industry makes milk sexy?
Yeah.
Like, do we need to sex it up, Dr. Bernard? Like, what needs to happen? Because you don't really hear until what the health and Cowspiracy, like some of these guys are getting this stuff out, you never see it.
It's absolutely true. The dairy industry does studies to try to show that dairy is safe for you or has some kind of benefit. And the meat industry is doing the same thing for meat. The egg industry is very active in this. However, there are lots of people, including my research team, that are doing studies showing that when you get away from the animal products and you follow a healthy diet, vegetables and fruits and beans and whole grains, that things change with better than any other diet, and we are winning that battle. If you look at the federal dietary guidelines, they're getting better and better and better. In 2016, they said vegetarian diets should be recommended. I'm talking about the U.S. dietary guidelines for Americans. And the scientific societies are now saying, it's true. Bacon, sausage, hot dogs, they do cause cancer. We are winning that battle, But it's always three steps forward, and then industry takes it two steps back and fights with us every step of the way. And they know that if people have a little bit of good news about a bad habit, they start saying, well, maybe I can bring these bad foods back.
I think I had saw a video, too, that you were talking about, that the American Medical Association is now changing foods in hospitals as well.
Yes.
Because I did always find that bizarre. I was telling you about my own family history. My mom had breast cancer, and she also had a stroke, so she was in...
Wow.
I know.
Sorry.
Things are all good, though. She keeps going, thank God. But when she was in the hospital, the things that you would eat, we would go get her salads and stuff like that, because it was like they wanted to come up the next day after you've had a stroke and feed you pancakes. It was crazy. Like, what? So are hospitals getting any better?
It was June of this year that the AMA said enough is enough. If you're waking up from your heart attack to a plate of scrambled eggs and bacon and sausage, that you're missing out on the teachable moment. At that point, the patient is ready to make a change. So you need to bring in healthy foods and help the patient through whatever resistance they have to eating healthy foods and start them on a better path. The AMA said stop that. Hospitals need to do two things. Have plant-based meals in there. And also, get rid of all the processed meats. That means hot dogs, bacon, sausage, ham. Get rid of it. And also, take that soda machine, put it on the loading dock, get rid of it.
Right.
And hospitals are starting to do this. There is no medical reason for having those foods there. It's just a question of banning them in the same way as a generation ago. They ban smoking.
I know. But I think, do you think that we're going to see that, though, pretty soon? Like,
I have no doubt about it.
Sodas and...
I'm going to confess something to you.
Oh, good.
Back in the early 1980s, I was a resident at the George Washington University Hospital, and I walked into our gift shop, and I bought cigarettes. I opened the pack, and I smoked them. On the way to the doctor's lounge, and my head of surgery was smoking, too.
Probably while doing surgery, right?
Luckily, not while doing surgery.
Now,
we weren't stupid. We knew it caused cancer, but we knew we had to stop at some point. And at some point, the time to stop is now. Mm. And we did, and we banned smoking from the whole hospital. We threw cigarettes out of the gift shop, and we were right. That's where we are now with food. We have to make that very same decision. The time is now. Yes, we all grew up with unhealthy things, meats and cheeses and so forth. That was part of our culture, but we know better now. And it's not just our own health that we're playing for, it's our kids' health. And if our kids grow up with the same habits we had, then just like two-thirds of adults are overweight now, one-third has diabetes or prediabetes now.
Right.
That's what we're giving to our kids. We can do better, and they can do better.
Also, I was going to ask you, and then I have a couple more questions for people making the transition, because lots of our viewers, lots of my listeners have watched the documentary. They're now reading your material, so they're ready to make the change, but they have questions. The other big video that's out there is from this Dr. Z Mad Dog, who basically goes through the film and tries to debunk everything you guys say. And I've heard that he wants to debate you and the other doctor in the film, Mark Garth, I think is his name. Are you entertaining this at all?
No. There is so much confusion now that there's really no reason to further it. That said, I'm more than happy to talk about the scientific evidence. And whenever we do research studies here, our findings are peer-reviewed, they're published in journals where we do get asked all the hard questions, and we have to be able to answer them. So yes, there are internet trolls, and a few of them even have medical degrees, and we kind of live with that noise, unfortunately.
Yeah, Dr. Garth Davis, that's his correct name, and he's come out and been very active on social media, being like, look, have you been getting emails, and this is a very hot topic. I mean, people are very polarized, like, this is propaganda, you're promoting a diet.
Well, people should promote a diet. And a generation ago, flip back, in the 30s and 40s and 50s, it was quite defensible to not have a position on cigarettes because we didn't have the research. But by the 1960s or 70s, if you didn't have a clear-cut bias that cigarettes were bad, you just weren't paying attention. Today, if a person doesn't realize that a plant-based diet is healthier than every other way to go, that's a person who just hasn't had access to evidence.
Right.
And there's a lot of noise and a lot of confusion out there, but we are doing our best to try to clear that up, because what's our alternative? Our alternative is to continue to have people who are not in the health that they want to be who are paying a huge amount of money for medications and treatments, and their lives are cut short. And most of all, their families are hurt by that, too.
Oh, I know. It's devastating.
You're not going to live forever. But let's use foods to help you live well, as long as you can, to live the longest, healthiest life that you possibly can have for yourself and for your family.
Okay, I am starting to be plant-based. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge. So a lot of our viewers have said, okay, I really miss things like cheese, meat.
Sure.
How do you get started, I guess? Because I think you see a documentary like this, you're very excited, you're very fired up, but then it becomes overwhelming.
Yep.
It's like I'm cleaning out my pantry,
yes.
I'm ditching everything in the fridge. Okay,
good.
Oh, Lord, what am I going to eat? How do you start to stay on it?
Very easy. Here's,
okay.
Here's how we do it. I've never seen anyone unable to do this. Step one, first of all, you have to understand why we're doing this. So if a person doesn't realize that fatty foods have, there's 9 calories in every gram of fat, and that's why I'm having trouble losing weight, they have to learn a little bit about it, about how nutrition affects them. And that's why we have books and websites and this movie. Okay, once you're ready to start, though, the next step is take a week, 7 days.
Okay.
And during that time, don't take anything out of your diet. Don't quit anything. But experiment with vegan foods, plant-based foods. Okay. Breakfast. Oatmeal, a little bland. So let me add some blueberries and strawberries and cinnamon and make it good. Pancakes, fine, but no butter on them. A little maple syrup, okay. Instead of the meat chili, I'll have the bean chili. So for 7 days, I'm just trying out my options. I'm going to the taco restaurant. Oh, can't have the meat taco, but bean burrito? Yeah, hold the cheese. So 7 days, try out my new options. Now, once you've got those options, take 3 weeks, 21 days, make it all vegan all the time. But that's easy because you already figured out the foods that you like. At the end of 21 days, you discover two things. You are physically healthier. You're losing weight. If you got diabetes, your blood sugar is going down. Your energy's better. Your digestion has finally sorted itself out. Your skin looks better. But the other thing is your tastes are changing. And the foods that you thought you couldn't live without just lose their appeal because you start
that
to realize.
That is true.
You start, you know, that's, I just don't really want that anymore. So
that's the amazing part, yeah.
7 days.
Okay.
Try out the new foods. Then a 3-week test drive.
Okay.
I call it a kickstart. And you can do it. It's 3 weeks that'll change your life.
I've been doing it, like I told you, part time, and I already feel a big difference. I have two final questions for you. One, I have a lot of female followers, and a lot of them have given up dieting. I've been one of those people. I went and saw a mindful eating therapist because I was so mixed up of being on the Atkins diet, Kashi Goline, and you know, it kind of plays with your psyche if you're someone that's had a borderline eating disorder.
Absolutely.
You know, so how do you tell men and women that have that past, like I do, where you kind of have this messed up relationship with food and you finally healed that, and this can feel like, am I going back to being on like Atkins, even though it's not? You know what I mean? How do you handle your mind?
Great, great, great question. So many people go on a diet, and the diet is, I'm going to eat 500 calories a day less. So the dietitian gives me this diet. But you know what? By Wednesday, you are so hungry, you're ready to eat the sofa, and then you blame yourself. You say, there's something wrong with me, and you start binging. Or you go on a low-carb diet that tells you, don't eat any potatoes, don't eat any sweet potatoes, don't eat any beans, don't eat any pasta, don't eat any bread, don't eat any fruit. And you're losing weight because you're not eating all these normal foods. And then you feel guilty if you had a noodle or something like that. And people blame themselves. But let me tell you something. There's nothing wrong with you. And there's nothing wrong with anybody who had trouble with those diets because those diets were not built for you. What your body is designed for is fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grains, these simple foods. And when you eat them without any calorie limit, without any carb limit, and you eat them in the way that nature is bringing them to you, you go through an adjustment because we've all been kind of seduced by these sugary, salty, other kind of products. But what you discover is that it's like having a car that takes unleaded, but you've been putting diesel in it all this time. When you put into your car the fuel it was designed for, suddenly it works. It drives better. Your body drives better, too, when you give it the fuel it's designed. And that comes from plants.
Last question. Is this diet for everyone? Because I hear from lots of people, well, I eat for my blood type, or, you know, I'm from a different background, and I don't eat this. So does this work for everyone, or is it not really for everybody?
A vegan diet, a plant-based diet, is for everyone at every stage of life, from conception all the way through. And the reason I say that is that there's so much confusion out there.
The
blood type diet, I'm type O, so I should have meat. I'm type A, I should be vegetarian. Wait a minute. When we bring people in our research studies, they're type O, and the book says he should have meat. I put them on the type A diet, and they do better. So in other words, the blood type diet was a well-meaning idea that doesn't work. I'm writing a new book now called Eat Right for Your Shoe Size. If you're a 9.5, you gotta be vegan.
Okay.
All right. You get the idea. So
Eat now, Right for Your... I like that title, though. That's good.
Don't get me wrong. People should follow a healthy diet, and a healthy diet means four groups: vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans.
Okay.
Which you can interpret in your own way. If it's Asian, it might be more rice and tofu. If it's Mediterranean, more pasta and chickpeas. If it's Latin American, corn, beans. You interpret it in your own way.
Yeah, what if you're Irish and Scottish? Wouldn't you just like more potatoes?
Pretend you're Latin American.
Okay.
Okay. Vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, and there's two supplements I want you to think about.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was another big question people had.
Very easy. Vitamin
B12. Okay.
B12 you need it for healthy nerves, healthy blood. It's not made by animals or plants. It's made by bacteria. And we can talk about why you need it, but the bottom line is you should take
B12. Okay.
The second one is a little more optional. That's vitamin D. It normally comes from sunlight on your skin.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were, our species was all in Northeast Africa, we got lots of sun, and we didn't need vitamin D supplement. We had the bad judgment to move to places like Washington, D.C., New Jersey, Toronto, Winnipeg, and where there's not so much sun.
Right.
And you need a vitamin D supplement. So that's it. Four food groups: vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans. Take a B12 supplement. And if you're not getting sun, take vitamin D. That's the whole deal.
Okay. You are sort of our true north, you know. Mm-hmm. Where's a website we can find you? Where's someplace when you are getting confused and overwhelmed by all these studies and the meat business and... Where's somewhere you can go to kind of come back to the simplicity of what you're saying?
Well, you can always watch What the Health again and take notes again.
just keep watching. Okay.
Yes. However, our website is PCRM.org. That's Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Okay.
PCRM.org. And one other thing. Every calendar month, we have a free program that starts fresh. It's called the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart. And it starts...
Oh, I'm coming.
August 1st, September 1st, October 1st, November 1st. It's in English, Spanish, Mandarin, Japanese, and one for people from India with Indian ingredients. And we've had between 500,000 and 600,000 people already use this.
Wow.
It's free, no commercial sponsorship. We're not selling any food product. And it's a really cool thing.
That's amazing. And also, I had read, I know you didn't want to talk about your age, but you look so amazing. I read that you're 64, but you look seriously 50. And, you know, you have an online fan base. People, like, think you're really hot. So, you're like a sex symbol, and you look so good.
Well, that's very nice. You know, when Paul McCartney was young, he wrote, "When I'm 64, you know, it's like life is over."
Yeah.
But I figure if I live to be 128, I'm only middle-aged now.
You look so good. No Botox, any fillers for you? You look great.
Botox.
No,
certainly
is that
not
part of my plant-based, or should I avoid that?
I suppose
too?
You could have that if you want it. We're not against all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Let's use the food to keep us as young as we can be.
Thank you so much, Dr. Neil Bernard. You're amazing. You're so inspired.
You.
Thanks.
Sure.
That was so great. Thanks, guys, so much for listening to In the Mind of Frage, new episode coming out next week. In the meantime, I hope that you'll subscribe to my podcast on iTunes. Just search Hey Frage, and would you leave a review? Hit 5 stars. Let me know what you like about the show. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.
Every day, hey Frage. What's the phrase that you hear every day? Hey Frage. What's the phrase that you hear every day? Hey Frage. What's the phrase that you hear?